This is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy, KCI 90.1 FM. And I'm here in Albuquerque with Greg Mello, the founder of the Los Alamos Study Group, who we often turn to try to explain the craziness of our nuclear programs in the United States and worldwide. And the subject today is this huge budget that's being proposed for modernization of our nuclear capabilities. So, Greg, just give us a background. It's over a $1 trillion plan, basically. I mean, today we were at the dental clinic trying to just nickel and dime dental care, and here's $1 trillion being spent on things that we don't need at all, basically. So, Greg, explain what's involved.
Sure. The Congressional Budget Office has been working on an estimate of what the Obama nuclear weapons plan is going to cost over the next 30 years. And they just published that, and it's about $1.25 trillion, 1.2 and a little bit. And that is about one-third modernization, meaning basically replacing everything that's in the stockpile, all of the bombers, the submarines, the missiles, the warheads, and the command and control. All of that has to be replaced because it's getting older, and if one wants to keep it far into the future, you have to do something about it. So basically, it's all being replaced with better hardware, better software, better everything. Better being a relative term. In the nuclear weapons world, better usually means worse. So the Trump plan is likely to include some new features, and we'll find that out in January.
Okay.
He'll get his version to think about over the Christmas holidays. It's coming to him on December 15th, and then the details of his plan will be released in January, and then, of course, the funding will be fought over. But it will. One thing is certain, it's going to be at least as big as Obama's.
Of course, yeah. It has to be bigger.
Yeah. about two-thirds operations, deployment, operating, you know, keeping going, just normal maintenance, and then one-third replacement.
Okay. So how in the world does something like this get paid for? It just seems insane that you could make a plan for something that we all agreed should be phased out. I mean, we have these agreements that you're supposed to reduce your nuclear arsenal. Steps were taken. And now we're going to completely replace the whole thing over again when we're supposed to be reducing. I mean, how does that make any sense, even from the point of view of the people that are proposing it?
Well, as people in the previous administration could say candidly, we have no idea how to pay for this. It makes sense only within the very narrow echo chamber of the empire, just to be to the chase. Yeah.
And you, as you said before, an awful lot of what's driving this is the need to keep the whole complex going. I mean, in other words, they have said that if we don't keep making these things, we won't have the expertise to even maintain them. And of course, they've spread out all the construction and maintenance of this all over the country. So each congressional district, not every single one, but I mean, it gets supported in Congress because each different enough constituencies get benefit financially.
Right.
And so it's just like a train that's going down the tracks off a cliff. You can't stop it because everybody depends on getting this money, even though it has no real function.
Yes, you can't use it at all, you know, hopefully, never.
Yeah.
I should mention that this doesn't include legacy costs.
Okay.
Like a cleanup of the mess.
Oh, yeah.
All this, the part of it that's in the environmental management budget. So instead of 1.2, it'd be closer to 1.5, 1.6, 1.7, And then it doesn't include any inflation. Well,
I see.
It makes an estimate of cost overruns, but it's corrected for inflation. It's really much closer to $2 trillion.
And remember, $2 trillion is $2,000 billion, basically, right? I mean,
right.
Am I getting my math right?
Yeah.
And $1 million, most of us can't even conceive of, let alone $1 billion.
Sure. So it's just... If you are in the Pentagon or Secretary of Defense or on a defense committee, you might say, as people do say, well, this is only 6% of the U.S. military budget. So...
Which makes it even more shocking. I mean, because the military budget is more than half of the total budget of the United States, right?
Yes, discretionary budget. Yes, exactly.
And it's larger than the entire military budgets of every other country in the world, right? Basically, I mean.
Well, it's larger than, you know, all of potential enemies put together,
right?
And then some, and it's 10 times Russia's, for example.
Right. Right.
So, but I think one of the take-homes from this is we can't ignore this if we want to have any kind of progress in terms of justice, in terms of offering any alternatives for the rising generations, in terms of climate protection. There's a tendency to get stovepiped into various issues, which is something that's created by our limited workload and targeted funding for nonprofits, as well as by just not wanting to talk about it.
Right, right. I mean, because it's such a, there's so little we seem to be able to influence. I mean, again, our congressional delegation, for the most part, is gung-ho for everything that would be spent in New Mexico for this. And so they can't really talk to the congressional delegation from Tennessee or from Texas or who, all the different areas that would benefit from this also. It's like an immovable object, basically. Now, go into a little more detail about some of the aspects of this, because, again, it's just such an impenetrable number, basically.
Yes, and I would like to return to, it is everything you say is true, but also it's true that we can win.
Okay, explain that.
do you want me to just... go right there for a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, in some ways, a house of cards.
Okay.
And the nuclear warhead complex is proceeding using a lot of World War II buildings. There's more than 1,000 abandoned structures. They have a huge backlog of upgrades they need to do. They have skill problems, management problems. They are, in many ways, like a stuffed goose. So money's been thrown at places like Los Alamos and Livermore in California. They have severe management problems. At the same time, the price tag for the truly big ticket items, the long-range bomber, the submarines, the ICBMs, they are competing with renewal of every other kind of military hardware that the military feels. A lot of which was built during the late Cold War and is coming to the end of its life also.
So you're talking about aircraft carriers? And
yes.
Bombers.
Fighter planes.
Fighter planes.
Yes, everything. And the history of the country being able to do all that at the same time is a history of failure.
Right.
So there's, you know, heads in Washington who are not peaceniks like us, but who are good management types, who say, cannot do, too much program chasing too few dollars, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that we should, even as we make ourselves aware of the challenges, we should say to ourselves, we can win if we are determined.
Mm-hmm.
And because this house cannot stand.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, this idea of the House of Cards. I mean, see how quickly Netflix collapsed their whole series, you know, when they lost one star. You know, I mean, I'm glad that they did. But again, it's just like, all it takes is that chink in the armor that will expose the emperor's new clothes,
Yes. I was interested that the Congressional Budget Office, which is a very, you know, doesn't like to use inflammatory language or any kind of drama. It's a no drama outfit, called this a pivotal time in nuclear weapon history because of everything having to be replaced. And it, the price tag is staggering. There's no clear place for where to get this money. There's Budget Control Act restraints still in place. So at such a time, just as you're saying, incremental gains can be decisive on it in a much larger. So you push the boulder just a little bit, you get a little leverage, and then it's going over the other side of the hill. And so for us in New Mexico, there's one of those pivotal things is pit production, the warhead cores, production of warhead cores, which is not needed. And it is extremely expensive. It is unsafe for the workers. The facilities are old. And there have been 7 or 8 attempts to renew them and get a large program of production started, all of which have failed.
And they keep having management problems, safety problems.
Yes. Now people ask me on Capitol Hill, can Los Alamos do anything right? And I say, well, not really, because they are not a production site. They don't have that culture. They never will have that culture.
Right.
The mesas are too narrow. There's fundamental geography problems. And the identity of the facility, which is... It conflicts with the production mission.
Right. It's not was designed as a production facility.
Yeah. No, never was.
Yeah. So how do the public, you know, do they educate themselves? How do they influence the legislators to really take a second look at this?
Right.
You seem to be kind of hopeful that they really are kind of balking a little bit at this.
Yes, they are balking. And there's, for example, the Navy. So the only real reason to make pits is for a proposed new warhead. Mm-hmm. Well, who's proposing this warhead? Well, it's the weapons labs and the Strategic Command and NNSA that owns the weapons labs. But the Navy doesn't want it. The Air Force is lukewarm, and they don't want to anger their funders and their congressional committees. So they don't come out and say, we don't want it, but the Navy does. And just recently, this summer, there was a hearing where a liberal congressman from California asked, how's the interoperable warhead number one coming along? And the Navy person said, that's just a study of a warhead. And NNSA said, oh no, that's a warhead program. So you had there really big disconnect.
So you're saying both the Air Force and the Navy really don't want this?
Yes, because it's quite possible that it can't be proven to work.
Oh no.
And it's extremely, trying it out is extremely expensive. You have to launch many missiles with Navy, you know, some Navy missiles, some Air Force missiles at different trajectories, some flat, some steep. And these tests are super expensive.
Yeah.
And the whole thing might not turn out. And so the entity that truly wants this is Livermore Lab. Uh-huh. Because Livermore Lab is running out of work to do.
Right.
And they privately told congressional committees that if we don't get this warhead and another warhead, morale will just fall through the toilet. And at our lab, our people's feelings will be hurt at our lab.
Well.
So that's a very thin ice to justify justify a $10 billion warhead and a $10 billion construction, you know, extravaganza, let's say, over the years, and then another $10 billion to operate and integrate is roughly $30 billion. And that's, you know, somebody's feelings getting hurt, and a few, you know, a couple thousand employees in California out of California's economy. That is
nothing.
A very narrow base to put that on.
But you're saying that if you start looking at this whole trillion or $2 trillion nuclear program, similar issues would come up with each part of the program, basically.
Yes.
That's your kind of...
Yes.
And that's why you think that if people really did resist this and kept the pressure on questioning it,
yes,
then these flaws would emerge, basically.
Yes, and there's some very fundamental issues which need to come out. And I think that if we're confident, they will come out. We can bring them out. So 122 countries voted for a treaty to ban nuclear weapons.
Right.
The signature process has started. There's 53 countries that have signed this treaty. It would make all of this illegal. It would make Los Alamos illegal, basically.
Right.
And we should be confident that and invest our political commitments in the kind of future we want and not be held hostage in a colonial manner by some kind of lesser evilism. Really, nuclear weapons and the military commitments which both parties have are not a lesser evil. We've been thinking of them as a gateway evil.
Right. We'll put it in the context, for example, of North Korea, who is, you know, rapidly developing more nuclear weapons capabilities. And we're kind of stuck. We can't really militarily stop them.
Nope.
If we attacked, we'd blow up all of South Korea and North Korea. I mean, there'd be millions killed, you know, basically. So the whole idea that a nuclear weapon is a deterrent is kind of put on its head, right?
Yes.
Yep. Explain that. I mean, why it doesn't really work anymore.
Well, you can't use a nuclear weapon like that.
Yeah.
Nuclear weapons are weapons of annihilation. You can't use them like a stick to get somebody to do something if they don't want to do it, if they have their own deterrent.
Right.
Which that's North Korea is using our logic.
Right.
Saying, don't attack us. We have nuclear weapons, and plus we have a very powerful military. And you cities, you know, lots of your forces and their cities well within range of our conventional weapons, let alone nuclear weapons.
Right.
And so they're deterring us. And of course, that particular conflict has a great deal to do with China historically. Right. Over the last couple of decades, it's very convenient to have a reason to base tens of thousands of troops in the Western Pacific and East Asia. And Korea was a convenient enemy for a long time. And I think now the cat is getting out of the bag, and now everyone's quite scared. And we have to learn to live with North Korea.
Right.
There's no other way to go forward there.
So we even hear Trump talking about talking to them.
Yes.
In the last couple of days.
Yes, because he doesn't have any other option.
Right. Okay, well, let's go from that subject. What are some other things that you want to bring up in the nuclear issues, particularly here in New Mexico?
Sure. I guess I want to continue with your previous question about what can we do. We need to hold our members of the congressional delegation and candidates, as well as governors, and as well as our legislators, to account on the subject of nuclear weapons.
They've got to be able to say why it's so good and why it's so bad.
Well,
I guess we'll get them on the record. Yeah.
Yes, we want on the record statements that they do not support pit production at Los Alamos National Laboratory. And people who are unwilling to say that they want nuclear disarmament, now it's a separate subject, but that if they're unwilling to say, I don't want Los Alamos to become a pit factory, then why do they deserve our support?
Right.
That's what we mean when we say that's the New Mexico or the Northern New Mexico interpretation of we can't solve our problems without having a peace agenda, without having an anti-militarist agenda. That's
right.
Our particular part of it, a big part of it. And if Mr. Lujan or
Tom Udall,
Martin Heinrich are unwilling to say, we don't like weapons of mass destruction. We don't want to make more weapons of mass destruction. We want to get off this merry-go-round of death. Then why in the world would anyone support them who would consider themselves remotely progressive?
Right.
Because those priorities are antithetical to any progress on a progressive agenda, on an environmental agenda, or a justice agenda. There, you can have little bagatelles. You can, have do some little thing, give a speech on the wonders of solar power or something like that. But if you're going to spend $2 trillion or one point, depending on how you calculate it, on nuclear weapons in the next 30 years, and then multiply that by a factor of 16 or 20 for the military budget as a whole, that is completely incompatible with education of children and so on.
Right. And we have so many needs, basically rent house. People can't even afford to rent a house anymore, basically.
Right.
We have, and look at California after these 8,000 homes burned down and because of climate change.
Yes.
I mean, people are desperate to have these kind of problems solved. Housing, health care.
Mm-hmm.
It just is crazy to be spending so much money. And if the congressional delegation feels that we need employment, come up and spend the money on these other needs. People could be employed all over the place for these.
And it's a great deal more efficient in terms of government dollars.
Right.
If you have a $200,000 a year job at Los Alamos, or $100,000 a year, plus the overhead and all the stuff which is bought from out of state, it hasn't been. If you look around northern New Mexico, it really hasn't been the boon that
it never was. Yeah, it never was.
I was just in Washington.
Okay.
And it was a really productive week. And we know that the Trump administration, usually I try not to blame everything on Trump, because Trump's terrible. We all know that. And it becomes very easy to just talk about the terribleness of Trump.
Right.
But in nuclear weapons, they are trotting out some very terrible and stupid ideas. And the rational people in the administration are having to shoot them down one at a time. So there's talk of neutron bombs. There's talk of building or bringing back thousands of tactical nuclear weapons, which are not covered by any treaty, to match Russian tactical nuclear weapons, which they either keep or can make on short notice because they have a very long land border.
Right.
And so that's low-yield intercontinental nuclear weapons. And there's a push in Congress to intentionally violate the intermediate range, INF, what is that? Intermediate Range Nuclear Force Treaty, I think,
okay.
INF.
So they can get out of it, basically.
Yeah. They don't want Russia. They say, Russia's violating it, which Russia denies. But if Russia's violating it, we should not deny ourselves this class of nuclear weapons also. So let's do it.
And so on top of this $2 trillion thing, they're coming up with new ways to spend more money on dangerous things.
Yeah. Yes, and fortunately, there are sane people that are shooting these things. Oh, and then, I'm sorry, I left out leaving the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So there are, they are being shot down, but they're... It's a tiring business, and something will likely get through.
Right.
So the what is interesting is that the weapons complex, not just at Los Alamos, but over at Pantex, at Kansas City, at Savannah River, at Oak Ridge, is struggling to keep up and struggling to operate. And its capacity is... maxed out.
Yeah. Do you think that there's the possibility of fundamental changes in how the whole nuclear program is going to be managed nationwide?
Yes.
Are they rethinking?
They're probably trying to rethink this. And it's, of course, a very deep groove at this point. And the military, for example, doesn't want the warhead program.
Right.
They've tried to push it over there across the river to the Pentagon and say, oh, no, that's way too problematic. We like the free money that isn't in the Armed Services Committee's appropriation. So they could try. But what we have to push for as well is fundamental change. We've got the Ban Treaty, and we have to raise the stakes with our allies, with the progressive Democrats we have, and say, look, we need fundamental change. In fact, I should say there are Republicans who may be allies, mm-hmm. of the Ron Paul sort, budget hawks. That some of the administration's more radical nuclear proposals are getting shot down by budget hawks.
And, of course, we had the votes on Tuesday where clearly the electorate was saying, we don't like Trump. I mean, they basically got, in Virginia, almost a 10% margin in electing a Democratic governor. That's unheard of in Virginia, really. So, oh. And in a lot of the lower races, a similar thing. I mean, the legislatures are shifting to Democrats. And in the exit polling, they're showing that the reason they voted is they don't like Trump. I mean, it's not the individual person they're voting. They're just sending a message to Washington. And so that if the Congress could be shifted, and you have Republicans who are also questioning that, and see that the writing's on the wall, that people are tired of this, maybe there is hope.
People should not lose hope at this time,
right?
Because of factors like that. There's a when George W. Bush took office, he also had a very dramatic plan to change out all the nuclear weapons, and it went nowhere.
Right.
And we, with the kind of climate disasters that we've had this fall, and it's staggering.
I think people really are getting aware. I mean, we've had these hurricanes of just incredible force, these forest fires. People know that the climate's changing.
Yes.
And I think that they're actually starting to say, we better do something.
Yes.
It comes down to.
Yes. You know. And look at New Mexico's economy. It, you know, basically what we're getting from our senators is just give the labs another chance. Well, it's 70, what? How many? I don't know how many years, 72 years, is it? Yes. And
it hasn't helped New Mexico.
No, it hasn't helped New Mexico.
Okay, well, we've got to wrap up here. Now, give the contact numbers, how they can help or be involved with Los Alamos Study Group. Go ahead.
So our website is lasg.org for Los Alamos Study Group. The office phone number is 265-1200, area code 505. That's 265-1200. Or email me at gmello, G-M-E-L-L-O, at lasg.org.
And you have a huge number of resources on the website that can go into more detail about all the different subjects that we've talked about today. And you go around the state and have meetings and give talks quite regularly.
So yes, we do. Fairly
often. Sign up for your newsletter, you know, you can find out about when those are coming to your area.
Yes, and basically the story that we'd like to get out is that there's low-hanging fruit in the policy, nuclear policy world, and we just don't have the number of hours in the day to harvest it.
Right.
And we would love to have skilled people helping us, and of course, we'd like to spend less time raising money. So,
okay.
The usual stuff.
Right. Well, thank you very much. We've been talking to Greg Mello of the Los Alamos Study Group on the crazy plans for a $2 trillion nuclear upgrade across the entire military of the United States. So, this is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy, KCEI 90.1 FM. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you.